Oh, yes. This is the Hardcore Marketing Show. I'm Casey Cheshire, your host for this epic journey. Today's show is sponsored by Ringmaster on a mission to launch B2B podcasts that create relationships, generate revenue, and drive growth. Ringmasterlive.com. Bam. We're live. We're doing this thing. And I can't wait to introduce my guest today. She is an absolute badass. And well, let me tell you about her. Who is this person, Casey? Stop leaving me on my toes here. She's an entrepreneur, a marketing thought leader, a speaker, a writer, and a sought after expert in a particular topic we haven't really learned a lot about, which is media buying. In fact, not only is she a powerhouse in this world, but she tells it how it is, which is honestly kind of a rare thing in that industry where it's like, sure, I'll sell you media. Go ahead and buy it. But no, like we need to know what's going to work and what's not working. So much so that she actually was recognized as a top woman in the media industry by Synopsis Media. President and CEO of Mosaic Media Agency, Marianne Pruitt. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Casey, for having me. Man, you make me sound amazing. I will take that badge of honor.
Yes, yes. Just clip that and that can be your wake-up alarm clock every day.
Ladies I'm all gentlemen. For it. Yes. Yes. Just it'll be my pump up music right there with That's Eye right. of the Tiger. And I'm just ready to go. Yeah.
That's right. We can add in some of that music into there and yeah, make it perfect.
All for it. So, yeah.
I'm so excited. So I'm going to stop talking. I want to smash some things here. So I'm going to hand you this thing. It's heavy for me, but I know you're like Alaska tough. So, okay, here we go. Go ahead and grab that.
Grab it. I got Thor's it.
Hammer. Okay, yes. There you go. Wow, that was, yeah, you just wielded that like a hatchet.
Thing.
So
we wrestle with bears.
You do, do right? you do.
We can handle this. So,
take Thor's hammer. Smash for me some kind of marketing myth, bogus strategy, misconception, set the record straight once and for all.
This was actually really hard for me to choose because there's so many myths, right? There are so many things. Number one myth though, oh man, I want to go two myths, but I'm going to go number
two myths. Okay, smash one and then you can keep the hammer and smash another.
And keep going. All right. Yeah. Because number one myth is that traditional media is dead. That is probably the biggest myth there is. Traditional media is alive and well. And actually what we saw in the last few years with the pandemic is a revival of traditional media. And we saw this shift in consumer behavior that we have on the digital side, absolutely. But if we do generational breakup and makeup of everybody, the traditional formats came back with a vengeance. We're talking mail, we're talking radio, we're talking TV. We actually saw TV and radio and these local platforms that were traditional platforms become alive with younger audiences as if they were new platforms. So when you are dealing with media and you are looking at your overall marketing strategy, think that through and make sure that we're including traditional in that omni-channel approach. We do not want to ignore it. Myth number two that I would
go
with.
Oh, wait, hold on. Before we smash two.
All right, we'll go.
We got to pick this one apart. Okay.
Yeah, pick it. So go.
Traditional, traditions, what is like, I remember when 90s music was like, what's happening today, yeah, right? Now I guess it's on the 90s oldies channel, but.
It totally is. Like my son the other day, who's 16, goes, Mom, have you ever heard of this band called Boys to Men? They are so retro and so cool. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes, son.
Yeah, I heard about them. I grew up in them. Son.
Yeah. Uh-huh. As I start breaking out into the song, he goes, you know all the words. I do. I really do.
Oh, really? Did you like whip out some lyrics for him?
Oh, I did. I was like, we jammed on everything Boys to Men for a good hour. Anyway, but with that, knowing, yes, all the formats and all these things, but this generation, this younger generation, and we're talking Gen Zs to young millennials that really truly have only had streaming available. That's all they've had. Of course, we've had radio, we've had TV, we've had those things, but we're talking like music on demand for them on a regular basis. Like this is a generation that knew Spotify before its parents knew Spotify. They Sure. knew to go pick their songs however they wanted to. And so you see like my son saying, hey, have you ever heard of Boys to Men? As if that's a new thing. And as if that's a new, they know it's a retro band. I guess it's like when my parents talk about the Beatles or, you know, Beach Boys or whatever, but we had it on the radio or whatever, or their records that they played. We didn't have it where it was just streaming and they could just go look it up and they could just get it whenever they wanted to. So when the pandemic hit, boredom hit in and set in, And what we saw is them going for other things, and they wanted information. They wanted to get what was going on in their area. So the younger millennials and the older Gen Zs, they actually wanted to know what was happening in their neighborhood and in their area and what was happening. So we saw this rebirth of traditional media. A few months ago, my younger son, who's 13, we were driving in the car and he looks to my husband and he said, "Hey, can you turn on?" And he names a specific radio station. And my husband and I look at each other because that's a radio station we listened to when we were in high school. And you're looking and you're going, and I said, "Buddy, what made you think of this station?" He's like, "Mom, like, did you know these radio stations, like they play music and then now they have apps and they have these things." It's like they rediscovered, they knew the apps were there. They knew the streaming was there, but there's an actual radio device that they can listen to. Traditional media is not dead, and we can't ignore it because we actually have the younger audience discovering it as if it's new.
Interesting. So there's almost this tendency to where if it's old, cast it aside, thinking like linearly, like it just, that we did that, now we don't do that anymore. Newspapers existed, or this medium existed, and radio, I mean, TV ads, billboards, direct mail, probably one of that. We have email. Why would we care about mail now?
Yeah, but direct mail had this huge comeback because people they were bored out of their minds. People were looking forward to going to the mailbox. So what happened during the pandemic created new habits. So we can't look at the pandemic and think, okay, oh yeah, no, that was just during the pandemic. No, the older generation, so I'll go a different metric and going into kind of teasing into my next myth, is older generations actually went straight to social platforms and digital platforms, which was an evolution that either was never going to happen or could have taken another 10 to 15 years. But overnight, it transformed it into something totally different. So it's a very interesting dynamic that we as media people and paid media and marketing that we need to be looking at. We need to make sure that this omni-channel approach is more important than it ever has been.
Amazing. And so the older generation sought out those newer platforms, and the newer generation sought out those older platforms.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was a total flip-flop. Isn't it crazy?
Yeah. I love how you said the pandemic created new habits.
Yeah.
Like that's like a mic drop moment right there, because it's like, oh, they're new habits. It's not just, we know it sucked and we know it was weird, but our habits shifted, and the things we regularly consume has changed.
And the amount we consume has changed. So we over consume information. We were already over consuming information, but now we are at a brain stimulation point that is over the top. It is higher than ever. And the consumer behavior habits that shifted changed permanently and long-term. Like, these are going to be habits that we don't see evolving back. And if they do, it'll take time. It's going to be a long while. I don't see digital ever evolving back. I think people are always going to be digital platform based and be on digital platforms, and they're going to be overly consumed with that. What I do see evolving, though, is how you use those digital platforms. You don't just use their, because the platforms themselves are shifting on data sets and things that you can use. But that's a different story. We can get into that at a point too. But with that, you know, in the traditional side, we'll see that evolution, but these are new habits that are created where it's like, I want to listen to the radio. I want to listen to local TV. Now, I listen to the radio and I listen to local TV, but I may consume it in a new way. I may consume it on an app. I may consume it on streaming or reading on Facebook or reading online, but local and traditional platforms being consumed in a digital age is extremely important. It's the same data sets. It's the same people. We are reaching ad space wise. We're reaching it the same way. So there's a way to do it, and making sure that you have this omni-channel approach for all the above.
Love it. Love it. And I think that's a perfect tie into me just saying, okay, I'm in. Like, I want to do this the right way. And I'm a little bit of a caveman when it comes to eat. I mean, I've done pay-per-click ads. I've bought some advertisements as a marketer, but man, do I not know too much about anything beyond just that small marketing manager scope of buying a few ads here and there.
Yeah.
Is there a right way to approach this? Like, how do I get started? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So there absolutely is. There's no doubt that there's a right way to approach it. It goes back to marketing 101, and it's very basic, but your first step is, who is that target audience? And it's more important in today's world of who is my target consumer. I change it as target audience to target consumer. Who do I want to have purchase and consume my product? Who is that individual and what are their habits? So right, step two is, once I think I know who my target audience is and who my target consumer is, I want to dig in and get to know them. I need to know them to their nth degree. I need to look and see and analyze who your favorite customers are that you have. Who are the people that recur by, and who are the people that you are looking at on the regular? What are their individual habits? Even if you have a B2B brand or you have a B2C, either way, that consumer has a life one way or the other. The big thing I tell B2B brands all the time is, just because you're targeting C-suite decision makers actually have a life. They actually have something outside of there. Target them as a person, not just in their role, and look at what they are. So get to know that target audience. So step two is getting to know that target audience and dig in deeper, get to know them really, really well.
This is great. Can we go back to number one? I literally was having a conversation today about people figuring out their target customer, their target consumer, sometimes their ideal customer profile, whatever you call it. And I had someone that said, you know what? I'd love to get you that, but I need more time. I understand the delay. Yeah. I'm looking for a sentence and you want to write up a report, but I feel like there's so much resistance that we don't really know who this ideal consumer is. And we're hesitant to try to, you know, like place a bet on one industry person role, that kind of thing.
We're so nervous to drill down because we're worried we're going to miss out on others if we drill down.
Right.
And in reality, what happens is, if you identify and drill down and find that individual, the others come. It's definitely a field of dreams moment, where if you build it for who your ideal customer is, that ideal customer circle starts to grow. So it is one of those things that you look at and you see, okay, ideal consumer of my product, taking 5 minutes and identifying who they are. First, you're not going to waste as much money in ad spend. You're going to be able to figure out exactly where they are, which gets me into my next step. And then you actually will then see the sales results of where you need to be. The misnomer, and I'll rewind back. Businesses, we are overwhelmed. We get exhausted. We have so many different things. We have to make sure we have inventory. We have to make sure all these different things, right? We're checking as business owners and as C-suite that's running businesses. It doesn't matter if you have 5 employees. It doesn't matter if you have 200. It doesn't matter if you have 1,000. We are checklist people that throughout the day, we are adding things to that list while we're taking things off of that list. And in reality, when I hear someone say, you know, yeah, I'll get that to you, but that target audience, I'm not sure. I just need a media plan. I just need something there. Slow down and know for a minute, that's not just adding something to your to-do list. That is something that is going to be crucial in your marketing. It's so basic sounding, but it is such a pivotal and key part in any marketing plan.
Booyah. Love that. And, so,
and with ahead. That though, I'm going to add one more thing. It doesn't mean you can't have more than one target audience. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. It's okay to have more than one. Because
can I have 12?
You can.
At what point am I just doing that? I'm trying to get everyone.
Well, it depends on what your budget is too. Like, how much do you want to spend on that? Think about that. So if you have 12, and you have a $20 million budget, okay, let's figure it out. But if it's a national brand or if it's just local, okay, you know, how do you dig that down? But if you sit there and you go, okay, here are my top 5, I'm going to whittle it down to my top 2, because most businesses have smaller budgets. Let me whittle it down to my top 2. And then from there, I'm going to look and see, okay, how do I target these top 2? Where are they? And where am I targeting them? And what is the plan built back for that? And when I look at that and I carry through those steps, it's going to become very clear which one I need to start focusing on more and more. And that's like the first step that we as businesses are scared to take, because if I niche down too much, then I'm missing out. There are consumers out there who won't even see me. They'll see you. They'll know who you are. They'll get there. And that's it's this balance overall that you just have to, it's okay. Don't be scared to niche down.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So we do pick that top 1 or 2 or however many, depending on our budget. we get to know them. Do you have some favorite questions? Like how do you get to know them? What are some of the ways you find things out?
What are their everyday habits? What's their everyday look like? Is it a woman that's a CEO? Get into very specifics. Does she have kids? Does she drive a certain vehicle? What's her commute like every day? Getting through these various things of an individual. I like to say it's like dating your consumer. You're getting to know them in a non-creepy way. You're getting to know them. And what would you do? What would you ask on a first date? Those are the types of questions that you're asking about your consumer. You're making some assumptions and things are going to adjust and grow. And you're going to see data sets that are there. But if you know very well that most successful businesses have a more niche target of who they're trying to target and get there and see who they are and get to know them.
You know, I love the analogy of the dating your consumer. And because I think sometimes, especially in forms, you know, I like to beat up the B2B forms where you're asking like blood type and social security number right. on your first date. It's like, just get to know each other for once.
Don't get creepy.
Don't get creepy. Yeah, just those initial questions, you know, like what do you do for fun? And and what do you do when you're not CEO badass
and that's
person?
That's exactly right. Casey, you're spot on with that because they're individuals. They're not just a CEO. They're not just let's say you sell candles. They're not just somebody who is like, they have something else. Like let's say it's a consumer product and let's say it's not B2B. So let's take B2C for a second. It's a consumer product. So let's take that example of, okay, maybe she is C-suite and she has expendable cash. Why does she want a candle? What is it that she was looking for? Where is she every day in her life? And really dig that down and look at it. Is she higher end? Is she like, what are the things that she likes? Is there a convenience side that is appealing to her? Is there like, what is the message point and what is the overall target of what we're looking at for as that individual consumer?
Yeah. Love that. Just dating questions.
Yeah. Like you said, not the blood type, not the, are you a donor? that type of question. You're getting to know them in that top level where then you can dig deeper as you go.
How does that help though? Like, how does it help to know? Cause sometimes I've seen like profiles, this person, they love cats, you know, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. they have a yellow Subaru or like, how can you use that information? Is there some information that's more usable than others or?
Yeah. So, you know, back in the day we used to, in sales and various things, I used to have these folders that I would have per client and it was their name. And over the years and over time, I'd collect information on them. Like what are their children's names? When are their children's birthdays? You know, various things, very individualized. As marketers as a whole, when we get to know that individual as a consumer and who they are, what we can do now, this is where we get into the digital side and my myth number two of digital is not that scary and lean into programmatic and know that it's there. Traditional and digital can work together and we want them to work together. But in our targeting now with programmatic, we very much can target those. Is she a truck driver? Meaning like, does she drive a pickup truck? Does she drive a Subaru? Does she drive a station wagon? Does she drive like, what are these various things? And we can target ads to their consumer habits. We can also target ads to their beliefs and who they are as an individual. That's why we want to get this information, because in programmatic space, we are bidding for the persona. It is no longer a demographic. It is a persona and an individual that we are trying to get to.
What does it mean in this situation? I've definitely heard of the word programmatic, but it sounds like it's this whole different shift in approach, or what is that?
It is. So programmatic is digital placement. It's not as complex as it sounds, but it is digital placement based on a bidding process. So you have various trade desks and various DSPs that you're bidding to have these ads placed. And what you're doing is you're bidding to target the individual that you want. So you're actually taking, okay, my demographic, and this is a big thing here, is my demographic is a woman between the age of 25 to 35, right? Mm-hmm. Then I'm going to get into what my persona is of that individual. What does she do? She's C-suite. We can target by job title. We can target by position type of businesses that she works in. We can target by what loans she's taken out recently. We can target by what car she drives. That's when you start adding in the behavioral layers of who we want. And then then the ads are served where she's consuming, where that generalization of that individual is, the ads are served on those platforms. And then the key thing is when you get into programmatic, and this is a very big red flag, make sure you have a partner that knows what they're doing in programmatic to target, and they're not just targeting, and make sure that they're optimizing on the regular. That is so important. You don't want to be showing up on adult websites. You don't want to be showing up where half of your stuff is bots. You want to make sure that you're really showing up where these consumers are.
Yeah. Shout out to Twitter and all their bots. Tell me about where this is. You started getting to where it can go wrong. So where are you seeing things go wrong? Let's say they have the wrong partner and they're doing everything wrong. You're showing up the wrong places, all that. What's the horror story?
The horror stories are the marketers and the businesses that are like, I know I need to be doing something. So they get with a partner or they try to do it themselves. Back to what you were saying is in that sense of testing it of like, oh, I know I need to probably try Google. So I'll test out a little PPC. And over here, oh, I know I need to do a little Facebook. So I'm just going to test it out. And there's no overall arching plan of these working together. They should be working together. Real quick, we hit on the Twitter side real quick. On the Facebook side, Facebook is no longer a targeting tool. It used to be, and it was good. But with Apple updates and everything, it's no longer a targeting tool. And you really need to be looking at it as a brand recognition tool, as an overarching. This is not going to be where you're going to target. You need to shift your targeting to programmatic. And that's where you need to be targeting and looking. Find a good, strong partner. Find somebody who's going to be honest, who's going to be upfront. Do not buy it from a TV radio rep. Do not buy your digital from a TV radio rep. A TV radio rep, that's what they do. Print, whatever. That's what they do. They have all started to go into the space of going into what is programmatic. And what we find is your CPMs are through the roof. Your targeting is off. There's so many different layers of fees that are behind the closed doors and nobody sees them. And so in reality, get a partner that's a direct seat on a DSP that will help you significantly in being able in that serving platform. Where it goes really, really bad is when you don't have that guidance or you don't have an overall plan. Actually have a plan. It can seem overwhelming, but do it and then implement that plan. It's like everything in life. Know what you want to do, make the plan for it, and carry it out. It's not rocket science, but you need to do it. So where does it go really bad is people that overpromise and underdeliver. And out, if you are a partner, don't overpromise and underdeliver. Actually carry through what you say you're going to do. Do what you say you're going to do and make it good for the clients. Make it work. Because those that overpromise and underdeliver, they make us all look bad. So we don't want that. We don't want that. We want everybody to be performing at the level in which they can. Do that, carry it out, make sure that you have a partner that's actually willing to work with you through that process and carry it through that process. And know the strengths of that partner. Ask them, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? Find that person that's going to be candid with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's so many horror stories out there, Casey. There's so many bad things where a TV rep comes in and says, oh, I can sell you digital. They're not selling you digital. They are selling you TV with add-ons, and that's what it is. And it's not to the same level of if you actually have a digital partner that's helping you with it. And try to find a partner that has experience in both traditional and digital. Try not to split it up if you can.
Yeah, I can definitely see how, you know, to someone selling radio ads, everything to them can be solved by radio ads. And so you exactly. Need someone just a little bit more of a broad view to be able to tell the truth.
And there's nothing wrong with that. They're salespeople. They're selling their product. Yeah. I get it. And I started this whole podcast by saying traditional is not dead. That's true. And that's great, but it's okay to ask for the help and find a partner to help you in it. Mm-hmm. That is okay. That is 100% okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That makes sense. Well, my next question really is like, who are you? How do you know all these things? Can you take me back in time to like little Marianne days? What was it like growing up? Did you know you're going to be an entrepreneur, crushing things, partner du jour, like all these things? Take me back in time.
I think, who am I? I often laugh at that because I think of little Marianne, who truly was lemonade stand at 4 years old type of
man. Did you really?
I really was. I was that kid where I was like, I'm going to sell whatever. Like I remember I had a cousin who wanted my little orphan Annie wallet. I think I was 5. And I said, okay, how much you want to pay me for it? I've always been like, I've had that entrepreneurial spirit and I've always had that type of a attitude of it, where you can build something, and building something is amazing, and being able to have multiple businesses and being able to do things across the board. But at the end of the day, I'm a big nerd, and that is what it all boils down to. And, you know, power to the nerds. I'm all about it. And I tell my kids all the time, nerds grow up to be great spouses. And I'm all for it. Like, I'm okay with that. And really, truly, I fell in love with media and marketing at such an early age. And it's so funny. My mom, when I first started my agency, my mom sent me a write-up of a jingle I wrote when I was 8. I've written a few jingles here or there, nothing big. That's not what I do. But the fact that I had rewritten, and she said she had multiple pages of jingles that I had rewritten with songs, and I'd taken common name brands and I rewrote them into jingles that were common songs. And she goes, you early on. And she showed me a letter that I wrote saying, one day I want to grow up and own my own advertising agency.
I don't remember this.
I don't recall saying it. I don't remember any of those things. I remember writing campaigns and loving doing that. But I never, ever knew that little 8-year-old me actually wanted to own an advertising agency. I like to say it's Angela from Who's the Boss that inspired me, but you know, cause she owned an agency. I don't know. But at the end of the day,
it's almost like all the heroines back then had agencies of some sort, shape,
it's
or
so true. You look at it, you go back and you're like, oh, those are all ad agencies. There's so many good movies with ad agency owners and ad agencies as a whole. But that being said, and moving forward of who I became and who I fell in love with, economics. So those are the two nerdy things, marketing and economics, that I fell in love with. So I bring this unique perspective as I'm in college. I worked my way through college, worked full time in media. I started in media when I was 17, and I started really young. And now, you know, all
what was that first media gig? Was that like radio?
So I started behind the scenes doing a lot of things, actually working in would have been graphic design at the time, which is still sketching, because we had to scan everything in. It wasn't digital yet. And then I got into TV, like small town TV station, and then eventually made it to a big network, and then eventually into radio, ended up working for the largest media firms in the world, and actually took that side of it, and then eventually became an agency owner. And when I did my degree in economics, I ended up getting a double major in economics and marketing, just fell in love with how the two of them can actually work together. And that's where I fell in love with media, was because the data of economics and the feel and the planning and the strategy of marketing coming together in one world is amazing, because data will always tell you a story. Everything will tell you a story there. I mean, when you marry that with marketing together, it's this amazing story for every brand. It doesn't matter. There's always a story there of what you can do for strategy.
Yeah. That combination of being able to be creative and then not just going out in the ether and hoping that it works, but being able to measure things later and know if you were correct and if you were great, celebrate. If you weren't, do something different, but not just hoping.
Yep, that's exactly right. And when you look at it and you say, okay, marketing and economics together, like you said, it's that creative side. Media can be very creative. I'm not just talking about your ad. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about how you are strategically targeting. You have to be creative in how you're doing that. And that combination of the two is just, it's absolutely incredible to think about.
Yeah. I love that. Fantastic. Yeah. It's now you're like, with your agency now, who is your number one? Who have you identified are your number one target consumers?
We work a lot with ad agencies, actually. So we offset and carry their media. That's a huge piece of who we work with. So the two target clients that we work with is ad agencies directly, where either we are your media department, or we offload what your media department can't carry, or where your strengths aren't, we help fill in those gaps. And we then work directly with brands, with their CMOs, within their in-house marketing team. So those are the two target areas that we primarily focus. And that's what we've grown our business on. And I'll tell you, I preach this niche constantly and know your audience well, because I can tell you from my own business and from who I am, target, get to know your customer, get to know who they are. But that is who we work with primarily, is knowing who are the in-house marketing team and then the ad agencies. That's who we work with.
Love that. So now I'm going to challenge you even further because you brought it up. So brands with CMOs. Okay. What kind of cars do these CMOs drive?
Okay. All right. Actually, they vary, but what do they drive? You would think Mercedes and various things. The highest of the CMOs actually are a lot down to earth people, believe it or not, even in these huge, huge, huge companies. So a lot of times they are, depending on their age group, but within our sweet spot, they're usually an SUV that they're driving. They're usually driving is somewhere, it's not over the top fancy, but it's not down on the bottom. So it's like right in that middle range of price range, which is another way of targeting is price range, not just by brands, and knowing that they have that's who they are. Most of them are parents. We work with both male and female. We are a little heavy. Well, I guess it's probably about 50-50, mm-hmm. actually. We at one point were a little bit heavier in the female space, but now I think it's about 50-50. And yeah, they definitely have that broad range of who they are, but they have their life outside.
Totally get it. Yep. What color car are they most likely to drive?
Okay, now you're really testing, Casey. I don't know if I've gotten that deep into it. I know our team targets that way, but I don't know if I would say blue. How about that? Let's go with blue.
Yeah, see, I'd be fascinated.
That's my favorite color car, right?
Blue. See, mine's red, but I had to work to eventually get to the red. But yeah, I'd be curious though, because I always feel like, you know, there's the colorful cars and then there's like the cars.
Just a car, know? Right? Yeah, that silver gray car. Yeah. I say blue. I have a blue and I have a red SUV.
Okay.
So I have two, like, I guess I'm kind of describing myself.
See, so. I've got a red SUV as well. Okay. And it's a Jeep. And most
I do too. I have a red Jeep.
Red Jeep. See, I like waving at people, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Jeep wave. Nobody else has that, right?
It's
nobody.
So true. It's like, yep. I wave at people all the time, Casey. Yeah. I'm telling you. It's true.
See,
that
makes it's sense. A thing. So I would be curious to know if later on, I bet you'll, now the seed is planted.
Oh, it's totally planted. It's totally, you know? I'm going to start paying attention. I'm more to pay attention to the characteristic traits of, you know, do they have kids? Do they, you know, what type,
what's
100%. The size of the company, those types, how many employees do they have? But now I'm going to sit there and think about even further. What color car?
Yeah. So your list was all the actionable things you should be thinking about. Mine is
your list was not, but that's okay.
I'm like, now here's the question. Have you heard of the ducking? Have you been ducked in as a Jeep owner?
No, but I'd like to hear about this.
It's a new thing now. So now your Jeeps wave at each other. But if we see another Jeep parked or you park next to one, you leave a little plastic duck on.
I have not heard about this. Oh, yeah. My word. Okay.
Yeah. So I've been ducked like 3 or 4 times now.
I have never been ducked.
And also at like,
this sounds amazing. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Now at hiking trailheads, I've actually been beared. So people have left like a beer under my windshield wiper, but yeah, the ducks. And so you end up having some, but then also maybe getting some. And so you can duck another Jeep.
And
I'm
going to start doing it. Why not?
Yeah. If you find out a customer has a Jeep, well, then you send them a duck with your company logo on it.
Like it. I see. So, I've never heard of this. That's amazing. Yeah.
We're helping the trend grow, like the trend that started wherever it started. Now it's growing.
It's like wildfire. Us Jeep owners, we are a breed.
There's a little crazy, but it's worth it. Like, in so
a little adventurous. We're adventurous people.
Yeah, yeah. And see, I'll get a Tesla as soon as they start waving at each other. Yeah. You know, but until they do.
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's true. It's very true.
I mean, I'm in my wife's car waving at people. And she's like, you're not in your Jeep. I'm like, oh, my bad.
I'm sorry. It's just a habit.
Person's like, who's that? Do you know that person? I don't know.
I just wave. I know. <Yeah. laughs> Because I'm in my Jeep. Yeah. No, right. I get it. Totally get it.
I have a bit of a hypothetical question for you now.
I love hypotheticals.
See, I may or may not have a time machine here in New Hampshire.
Oh.
It's actually in the backyard covered in a tarp. But let's say you come visit. Visit New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. We get some lobster, some beer, and you get to use the time machine, right? Yep. It's a particular kind of time machine, though, because it goes back in time to 4 days after graduating with that marketing economics degree. And you get to meet that Marianne.
Yep.
And you can have a conversation with her. You can say anything you want, and the space-time continuum will be okay. You won't create, you know,
no ripples,
a time loop or ripple or anything. Flashpoint won't be created. You'll be okay.
Good to know.
What do you tell yourself? What kind of things do you say?
I think this is what I would tell myself. And I think this is so important for all entrepreneurs. And if I, and I tell every young entrepreneur this anytime, trust your gut. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to tell you what you should do. They're going to try to scam you into things, that are going to try to pull you into events. They're going to try to pull you into businesses. They're going to try to pull you into whatever. And you're going to be eager and you're going to want to do it. And you're going to want to be like, this is my path to success. And I'm so afraid to say no to something, because what if it's the next Chick-fil-A? What if it's the next whatever? Trust your gut. Do that research, figure it out. Know at the end of the day what pencils out and what doesn't. Because at the really, truly, if we look at it, that Chick-fil-A option and that Chick-fil-A moment, they are far and few between. But you've got to listen to your gut when it's time for it, and listen to it. And when it happens, you will know. Trust yourself. Trust yourself. Trust the faith that you have in yourself. Trust and know that intuition that you have. And it is okay. Don't be afraid. Just go for it. So that is the biggest thing. And I say it anytime I possibly can to any young entrepreneur, trust your gut, listen to it, listen to everything that you have. If you have a weird feeling about something, you're right. That's a weird feeling and that's not right. If you have a red flag and don't ignore it, call it out, be direct, be upfront, know who you are. Don't worry about what others think and just keep going forward.
It sounds like you're feeding that gut too. You said, do the research at the end of the day, know what pencils out.
Absolutely.
So you're not just letting your gut just fly around and good luck, gut. You're like, I'm giving you whatever I can give you.
Yes. Do that research. Find out what's going on. Find out if somebody wants to come and get into business with you, find out who they actually are, meet their family, get to know who they are as an individual, get to know what their past practices have been. Don't go into business with somebody without checking references. I mean, I'm serious. Like, it's things like that. Do the research, find out. Don't go into everything blindly, but at the same time, trust it. If there's red flags for you, make sure that you're fulfilling whatever it is that red flag is to answer the question that your gut has. It's okay. And I'm going to tell you, nerves and gut are two totally different things. You will be nervous going into some business opportunities. I promise you. It's when your gut's going, something's not right. I'm not sure what it is. Trust that. Know that. It's okay to say no. It's okay to turn down an opportunity. And then
tell me about that. Tell me about the nerves versus gut though. Cause that's tricky.
All of us are nervous no matter what, or all of us, when you're taking any kind of risk, you're going to have a moment of, oh my gosh, did I just do this?
Yeah.
What am I doing? But when it's fueled with excitement and when it's fueled with, you can't sleep at night because you can't wait to launch this, or you are so excited to wake up and do that, you figured out where you're going. That's one thing. That's nerves. That's adrenaline. Slow that down enough to ask your gut if there's anything negative in it that are red flags that you're ignoring. Don't ignore the red flags.
Oh, I love that.
And dig deeper on those red flags. It's totally fine. And honestly, if you do say yes to something and later on there's a red flag, here's the next thing I tell myself, it's going to work out. It's going to be okay. I promise everything. There's never a, oh my gosh, it's the end of the world. It will work out. Everything works out.
Yeah, that's really huge, because otherwise you can just cycle around.
Spiral all day long and you'll never get anything done. It's okay.
So, yep. You know, related story. I went hiking by myself outside of Anchorage on a business trip. And I had these little things going, should I be doing this? Does anyone know I'm actually here? And are there random bears out there? They're going to eat me.
Did you lose cell coverage?
I don't even know. And this was, you know, a couple years ago, decades ago. And so thankfully I ran into a bunch of German tourists who were like hiking as well. I'm like, I'm going to hike with you guys if that's cool. And they're like, yeah. And I'm thinking, which one of these guys can I outrun? they all look pretty fast. They all look like footballers. Yep. I don't know.
Exactly.
But yeah. So listen to that voice and feed it. But then
yes. Know exactly what if you have a red flag, and usually what happens is it's a red flag and they go, oh, no, that's nothing. Because we want it to happen so badly and we want it to work so badly. It's okay to explore the red flags in the gut, and you should, because you don't know what will be unveiled and you want to keep digging. There's always, I will tell you, like in any business decision, you don't always know everything that you're deciding. You really don't. And young entrepreneurial anyone that you feel like you know, you feel like you understand, and no, that's going to be fine. Where in reality, stop, slow down for 5 minutes. Don't let that adrenaline and excitement and nerves talk you out of there's something not right, or there's something I need to explore. There may be, everything might be fine. Just explore it and feed
it. Yeah. Yeah. Explore that.
Yep.
Don't let it go.
Yep.
Just because you want it to work out.
Be honest with yourself. Mm. Be honest and upfront, and be upfront. It's okay to disappoint people. Make sure that you, like, that's at the end of the day, their life is their life. Your life is your life. And it's okay to disappoint people. I talk about our anchors a lot. This is a big subject of mine that I talk about, of anchors is your faith, your family, the individuals that you are anchored in and that never falters. An anchor serves a purpose. Everything outside of that, don't worry about it. Don't worry about what other people are thinking or saying.
And if you have anchors, you don't have to, it makes it easier to not do that. Otherwise, if everyone's your anchor, then you're being pulled all over the place.
You're all over the place. And then yeah. It's no longer serving its purpose to hold you steady.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Neat.
Yeah. Thank you so much. This was a blast. Well,
where can people connect with you if they want to reach out? Maybe they drive a colorful SUV, they're a CMO and they need some help with media buying. Where do they reach out?
Yeah. And at any point, if anybody ever has questions or just wants more information, I love to share knowledge and I love to share info. So you can reach out at mosaic.agency/contact. That comes straight to my email. Anytime, any question, small, big, whatever, reach out. And I'm always here to help. You can also find me on Twitter at Media Maps. So that's MAPS on Twitter. And I'm on LinkedIn, Marianne Pruitt. So find me, connect. I love connecting with fellow marketers and getting to know you and just collaborating and working together.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. Well, thank you so much, Marianne, for coming on here, sharing wisdom and sharing knowledge and getting our heads screwed on straight when it comes to things like traditional media and what the possibilities are, so we don't overlook things just because they've been around for a while.
Yep, exactly. Have that omni-channel approach.
Yeah, so good. So good. And for those people listening, if you've learned something, and I freaking know you have, because I literally have 2 pages of notes over here, front and back, then share this with someone else. That is thought leadership, getting some good information into other people's hands. Let's go. That's what we need to do. You know, one person, 9 people, 3,004 people. Either way, share this information. And again, Marianne, thank you so much for being on here.
Thank you so much, Casey. I appreciate it.
All right, everybody. It's been another exciting episode of the Hardcore Marketing Show. We will catch you all next time.